Imagine waking up, grabbing your laptop, and realizing an autonomous AI has just spent the entire night successfully disproving an 80-year-old mathematical
All
theorem.
right, while you were sleeping.
Exactly. And then before you can even really process that, you read that a teenager with a $5 thumb drive just completely shattered your company's deepest enterprise encryption.
Yeah.
Welcome to May 21, 2026.
It is genuinely one of those rare 24-hour windows where the whole foundation of the internet and really our entire digital infrastructure is just being aggressively repoured. We're looking at this crazy simultaneous collision of, hardware breakthroughs, software leaps, and just total security failures.
And that is exactly our mission for today's deep dive. We are unpacking this massive stack of notes and excerpts from the May 21st edition of the Tick and Knight Tech newsletter.
Huge issue.
Oh, massive. We have six fast-breaking stories that all hit on this exact same evening. And when you synthesize them for you, the listener, they don't just give us the news. They actually provide this startlingly clear blueprint of our immediate technological future.
You really do.
So let's just jump right into the physical bricks of this new infrastructure. NVIDIA's Q1 2026 earnings report dropped, and the numbers are, they're staggering.
Staggering is basically the baseline for them lately, though, right?
Fair point. They posted $81.6 billion in quarterly revenue,
Wow.
and they're forecasting $91 billion for Q2. But, the financial headlines are kind of burying the actual shift in the landscape here. CEO Jensen Huang announced that NVIDIA has unlocked a brand new $200 billion total addressable market.
A sector they've never really even competed in before.
Right.
He's talking about the hardware required for agentic AI. So NVIDIA just launched this new piece of silicon called the Vera CPU. But to really get this, we need to step back and look at Huang's central thesis here.
Okay, let's unpack this.
So he's pointing out that the current internet is built for about 1 billion human users, people like us.
Sure.
But the next iteration of the internet is going to be populated by billions of AI agents. And these aren't just chatbots waiting for you to type a prompt.
No, these are autonomous.
Exactly. These are autonomous programs that go out into the web to, like, negotiate vendor contracts or audit code or book really complex travel itineraries completely in the background.
So, wait, for the last 5 years, NVIDIA's entire trillion-dollar empire was built on GPUs, right? Graphics processing units, the massive chips that actually train the AI models.
Yeah, but Huang's argument is that while GPUs are essential for the thinking or, the heavy lifting training phase, an autonomous AI agent needs a different kind of digital workspace to actually execute its daily chores.
It needs its own PC.
It literally needs its own personal computer.
The analogy that really helps this click for me is looking at the difference between a brainstorming session and the final write-up. So a GPU is like this chaotic room of 10,000 people shouting out ideas, processing millions of possibilities all at once.
Yeah, total chaos.
Right. But the Vera CPU is that hyper-focused employee sitting in a quiet office, furiously typing out the final report, just one word at a time, without any distractions.
That maps perfectly to the architectural shift, actually, because a traditional CPU, like an Intel or AMD chip in your laptop, or even a standard cloud server, it's designed around a core architecture to distribute parallel workloads.
Because it assumes you want to run a web browser and play a Spotify track and download a file all at the exact same time.
Right, the CPU acts as a traffic cop, routing all those different demands. But NVIDIA built the Vera chip as a TPU, a token processing unit.
Which is honestly confusing because Google already has something called a tensor processing unit.
Yeah, tech naming conventions strike again. But NVIDIA's token processing unit drops the traffic cop routine entirely. It is uniquely optimized for sequential token generation. It doesn't care about running 50 background apps. It is purely designed to spit out the next word or the next line of code, or the next logical action in a sequence at just blistering speeds. It processes an agent-specific task linearly, faster than anything traditional CPUs can handle.
Well, the sales numbers totally validate the strategy. The newsletter notes NVIDIA has sold $20 billion worth of these Vera CPUs just since they launched in March.
In a few months.
Yeah. But wait, AWS, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud, these massive hyperscalers buying these chips, they've spent the last 2 years desperately trying to build their own custom AI processors.
Very true.
Amazon's CEO Andy Jassy was just boasting about their internal silicon. So why are they still handing NVIDIA $20 billion for a brand new chip? Is NVIDIA's physical hardware really that far ahead, or are they just getting too greedy crossing into the CPU lane?
It's not just the silicon, it's the software trap. So NVIDIA has this proprietary software layer called CUDA, Compute Unified Device Architecture. CUDA is essentially the operating system for AI development.
And everyone uses it.
Almost every developer on Earth is locked into using it. It creates this massive moat. So AWS and Google absolutely want to break free and use their own chips.
Right.
But the demand for agentic infrastructure from companies launching things like Salesforce's Agentforce or Microsoft's Copilot, it's accelerating so wildly that they physically can't deploy their own silicon fast enough to meet it.
Ah. So by launching Vera, NVIDIA is basically forcing the hyperscalers to buy their CPUs just to keep up.
Exactly. They are effectively attempting to monopolize the entire AI lifecycle from training to daily execution.
Wow. So if these new Vera chips give AI its own private high-speed workspace, it completely changes what the AI is actually capable of executing in the background.
It does.
It's no longer just drafting emails. It's being left alone to do deep, unguided research. Which actually brings us to the software side of this evening's news. OpenAI announced that one of its models successfully solved the unit distance problem.
This is a huge deal. This is a legendary geometry conjecture. It was posed by Paul Erdős way back in 1946.
And the problem essentially asks, how many pairs of points can sit exactly one unit apart on a flat, infinite plane?
Right, and for 80 years, the global mathematical consensus was that a square grid was the optimal arrangement.
But OpenAI's model didn't just find a new way to calculate it. It completely disproved the 80-year-old belief. It discovered an entirely new family of geometric constructions.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at this announcement, and I can't help but remember the disaster from just 7 months ago. You remember when former OpenAI executive Kevin Weil went on social media and boldly claimed their GPT-5 model had solved 10 unsolved Erdős problems?
Oh, yeah. And he was just mercilessly mocked by the scientific community.
It was brutal.
Rivals like Meta's Yann LeCun and DeepMind's Demis Hassabis tore the claim apart in hours because the model hadn't actually solved anything. It had just regurgitated solutions that were already buried deep in its vast training data.
It was basically advanced autocomplete hallucinating a breakthrough.
Exactly. Just because it recognized the pattern of the question, well, ended up having to delete the post entirely.
Right, so what makes this May 21st announcement any different? How do we know this isn't just another smarter autocomplete trick?
Well, the difference is the mechanism OpenAI is using now and the actual people who are willing to put their reputations on the line to back it up.
Okay, like who?
So Thomas Bloom, the mathematician who runs the official Erdős Problems website, and the exact guy who publicly called out OpenAI's previous failure, he verified this proof.
Oh, wow.
Plus, Noga Alon and Melanie Wood backed it, and Fields Medalist Timothy Gowers reviewed it. And a Fields Medal is effectively the Nobel Prize of Mathematics.
Right.
Gower said he would recommend the AI's proof for publication, quote, without hesitation.
And Gowers didn't just say the math was technically correct. He specifically noted the model showed, quote, unexpected creativity and insight.
Yeah.
That is a terrifyingly loaded word to apply to a machine. Creativity.
It comes down to the architecture. The source explicitly notes this was achieved by a general-purpose reasoning model.
Wait, the source says this was a general-purpose reasoning model, not a math-specific tool.
Correct.
If it wasn't explicitly trained just to do geometry, does this mean AI can now hold long, unguided chains of complex reasoning across any discipline?
That's the implication. Traditional AI relies on pattern matching. You ask it a geometry question, it scours its database for the statistical probability of words related to geometry. But general purpose reasoning means the system is programmed to understand the underlying logical rules of mathematics itself.
So it doesn't need to find a similar human answer to copy.
No, it can deduce entirely new truths step by step by applying universal logic.
That distinction is wild. We are moving from AI as this super encyclopedia to AI as an active independent researcher. And the newsletter notes the applications of this specific geometric breakthrough aren't just academic, right?
Not at all. It immediately impacts how we design physical communication networks, how we structure error correcting codes in data transmission, and even how chemists predict molecular structures.
The AI is uncovering fundamental rules of the physical universe that human minds literally couldn't map.
Yeah, it's profound.
So if an AI can hold a long, unguided chain of complex reasoning to outthink a Fields Medalist in an afternoon, the obvious question for you, the listener, is where does that leave human creators.
Right.
How do we protect human culture when an AI can generate anything with unexpected creativity? This friction is perfectly captured by Apple Music's open letter to the industry, which was released on this exact same night.
Yeah, the letter is titled What We're Doing to Keep Music Fair. And Apple is taking a highly proactive, very philosophical stance here.
Because right now, AI music is, what, less than 1% of plays?
Less than 1% of all plays on Apple Music, yeah. But they see the trajectory, and they are establishing hard borders before the ecosystem is just flooded.
They outlined 5 core rules. First, transparent labeling of all AI audio. Second, technical safeguards to manage AI content. Third, aggressive anti-fraud measures against stream manipulation.
Important one.
Fourth, zero tolerance for using AI to impersonate real creators. And fifth, a complete ban on what they call overly AI-reliant content.
And the stated philosophy driving all these rules is that technology must amplify artists, not replace them.
I mean, I completely understand the transparent labeling. It's like organic versus GMO labels at the grocery store. Listeners deserve to know the ingredients of their audio.
Sure.
If I'm listening to a raw acoustic heartbreak ballad, I want to know if a human heart was actually broken to write it. But I got to push back on that fifth rule banning overly AI-reliant content. How on earth does Apple define or enforce that?
That's the million-dollar question.
If the AI is as smart as that OpenAI math model we just talked about, won't the AI music eventually be completely indistinguishable from human music?
Enforcement is going to be a total nightmare because art isn't a math equation, you know. It's a spectrum of choices. It brings up the classic Ship of Theseus paradox.
Okay, how so?
Well, if a human producer uses an AI to generate a single drum loop, is that overly reliant?
Probably not.
Right. But what if the AI generates the underlying melody, but a human sings it? Mm-hmm. Or what if a human writes the lyrics, but the AI generates the vocals and the entire instrumental track?
At what point is the human just a bystander typing a prompt?
Exactly the problem. Apple is trying to install this cultural security door, but the nature of generative tech is that it fundamentally blurs the line between human intent and machine execution.
Yeah.
They are forcing themselves into a position where they will have to make incredibly subjective artistic judgments on millions of uploaded tracks every single week.
And while Apple Music is debating the high-minded philosophy of what constitutes human art, the actual physical security doors of our computer systems are being completely ripped off their hinges.
The contrast of these stories is what makes this specific night so vital to understand.
It's crazy. We are in an era of $200 billion AI processors uncovering the secrets of molecular chemistry. And yet the exact same newsletter details the disclosure of the yellow key vulnerability.
Such a mess.
It's a zero-day flaw officially designated CVE-2026-45585, discovered by a researcher known as Chaotic Eclipse. And this flaw completely bypasses Microsoft's BitLocker encryption with a CVSS score of 6.8. The mechanism for this exploit literally sounds like a bad 90s hacker movie.
It really does. It requires almost zero technical skill to execute once the file is prepped.
Walk us through it.
So a hacker takes a specially crafted FSTX file and loads it onto just a standard cheap USB drive. They plug it into a targeted Windows machine, reboot the computer into the Windows recovery environment or WinRE, then they literally just hold down the CTRL key on the keyboard.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Wait, they just physically hold down the CTRL key?
That's it.
How does pressing one key override military-grade enterprise encryption?
It exploits a behavioral trust assumption that's built into the system's architecture. So the FSTX file is a file system transaction log. When the system boots up and sees the specific file on the USB, it triggers an automatic diagnostic check.
Okay.
But the Windows recovery environment is programmed to assume that if a physical key, like the CTRL key, is being actively pressed down during the specific boot sequence, there must be an authorized IT administrator sitting at the desk running manual diagnostics.
Oh my God. So the system temporarily pauses the BitLocker security handshake.
Precisely. It pauses the lock to allow the quote-unquote admin to work, which drops the attacker straight into an unrestricted command shell with full access to the encrypted hard drive.
Wow.
All of Microsoft's software encryption is defeated by a $5 thumb drive and a finger on a keyboard.
The panic from institutions must be unbelievable. The source notes Microsoft's temporary mitigation is either having IT departments manually mount the recovery image to delete a specific executable file, stx.exe, across every machine, or forcing companies to switch their encryption from TPM only to TPM plus PIN mode.
And we should probably clarify what that actually means for the end user.
Yeah, please.
So TPM stands for Trusted Platform Module. It's a tiny, secure, physical vault on your motherboard that stores your encryption keys. In TPM only mode, the computer checks the vault quietly in the background and just boots up to your login screen.
Like normal.
Right. But switching to TPM plus PN mode means every single employee now has to type in a separate pre-boot password before Windows even starts loading.
It's an absolute administrative nightmare for any large company or, you know, school district, which actually explains the calculus behind the next story. Kansas City Public Schools just announced they are dumping 30,000 Windows PCs and Google Chromebooks.
Just getting rid of them all.
Yeah. They approved a $2.7 million budget to become a 100% all-Apple district. They're purchasing over 4,500 of Apple's new entry-level laptop, the MacBook Neo, just for their 8th graders and up. Does this Kansas City shift signal the death of the cheap Google Chromebook era in favor of premium security?
It really might. For a decade, the education market was entirely dominated by Google Chromebooks because they were practically disposable.
Right? Yeah, $100 a pop.
Exactly. If a kid drops a plastic laptop, the district just buys another one. But the definition of value in enterprise hardware is fundamentally shifting. Kansas City's chief technology officer noted they need devices that are fundamentally secure by design.
When you look at vulnerabilities like YellowKey, you realize the cheap hardware era is dying. Schools and enterprise businesses are doing the math and realizing that paying a premium upfront for Apple's tightly controlled, closed ecosystem is actually cheaper than dealing with constant catastrophic security breaches.
And Tim Cook actually specifically mentioned this on Apple's earnings call. They were completely caught off guard by the institutional demand for the MacBook Neo.
What were the numbers?
Well, they originally projected shipping 6 million units, but they are now rapidly bracing the supply chain for 10 million.
Yeah.
It is a massive flight to hardware security.
So the physical boxes we use matter more than ever, whether it's a secure MacBook for a high schooler or a Vera CPU for an AI agent. And the legacy tech giants are realizing they don't have the right people to navigate this transition.
No, they can't rely on the old playbooks anymore.
Which brings us to a wildly unusual corporate shakeup at Microsoft Xbox. They just hired Matthew Ball as their new chief strategy officer.
Yeah, Aisha Sharma, the CEO of Xbox, personally brought him in. But Matthew Ball isn't a veteran Microsoft engineer, and he's not some traditional corporate ladder climber either.
Right.
He is an outside industry analyst. He's best known as the author of the highly influential State of Video Gaming Report.
It is such a strange pivot. I mean, it's the equivalent of taking a brilliant architecture critic who writes essays about how skyscrapers should look, and suddenly making him the lead engineer on a billion-dollar construction site.
That's a great way to put it.
What does it say about Microsoft's internal panic that they are pulling an outside analyst to save their hardware strategy right in the middle of this broader AI computing revolution?
It signals that Microsoft recognizes the extreme peril their Xbox console division is facing. Ball is stepping into an absolute perfect storm right now.
The component costs alone, right?
Yes, the component costs to physically manufacture a console are skyrocketing. Microsoft has suffered massive internal corporate upheaval and studio closures recently, and they are facing unrelenting competition from Sony, Nintendo, and PC gaming giants like Valve.
But for the last few years, Microsoft's entire gaming narrative was focused on the cloud and Xbox Game Pass. The messaging was essentially, you know, the physical console doesn't matter. Just stream our games to your phone or your TV.
But Sharma's first mandate for Ball is explicitly to strengthen the core console business. They realized they cannot abandon the physical box in the living room.
Wow.
Ball understands consumer behavior and macro industry trends deeply. Microsoft needs him to justify why a dedicated gaming console should exist in a world where NVIDIA is building AI infrastructure and Apple is monopolizing secure consumer hardware. He has to carve out a physical footprint for Xbox before the entire paradigm shifts away from them completely.
So let's take a step back and look at the blueprint we've unrolled over the last 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. The architecture of the next decade was laid out in a single evening on May 21st, 2026. Mm-hmm. NVIDIA is laying down the physical hardware next with the Vera CPU.
Yeah.
OpenAI is writing the super intelligent reasoning logic that will run on those bricks.
Mm.
Apple Music is desperately trying to define the cultural boundaries of what it means to be human in this new world.
Right.
Everyday institutions like Kansas City schools are fleeing to fortified, secure ecosystems to survive the chaos of things like the YellowKey exploit. And giants like Xbox are desperately pulling in new visionary architects like Matthew Ball to help them find a room in this newly constructed house.
It's a profound transition, and looking at all these pieces together leads to a lingering question that isn't explicitly written in any of these newsletters, but is the inevitable collision course of everything we've analyzed today.
What's that?
Well, Jensen Huang envisions a web populated by billions of autonomous AI agents acting on our behalf, powered by Verus CPUs.
Right, doing our research, booking our flights, managing our schedules.
But what happens when your AI agent needs to negotiate a task with my AI agent?
Oh, wow.
If we have billions of non-human entities interacting, trading, and reasoning at the speed of light, will they inevitably require their own agent-to-agent security protocols? Will they need to build their own hidden internet infrastructure? And perhaps most unsettling, will they create their own digital economy transacting in microcurrencies and computational tokens to prioritize tasks that operates entirely outside of human perception or control?
We build the infrastructure for them, and then they lock us out of the negotiations.
Exactly.
That is definitely a thought to keep you up at night. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the architecture of our immediate future. Stay insanely curious, keep questioning the foundation beneath your feet, and we will catch you next time.